I'm so glad to be here. Blessings and greetings. I'm Patrick Brown. I use he and they pronouns on the unceded land of the Ohlone in Oakland. I love how skillful you are, Emiko, with like this welcoming, because Zoom is an imperfect technology, as are we. So I'm just acknowledging, please do chat myself or Emiko if there's a challenge with the sound. We've been playing with my headphones and different configurations, but if there's something that can help people show up more fully tonight, if there's access needs, please don't hesitate to share those with me or Emiko in the chat. Just by means of introduction, I do come from Chicago, and this process of walking into the Dharma was a difficult one. I did come through the doorway of suffering. The burnout of this nonprofit job, I'm sure it's not unfamiliar, but the ways in which our culture and our country invite us to kind of like give and be of service, I thought I was doing great things with my nonprofit. I was really popular. I was on Oprah. My nonprofit was like workforce development for formerly incarcerated folks, and it was phenomenal. But it was, you're writing the grants, you're doing the funding, you're doing the coaching and the training. I mean, it's just, And I was so bereft and broken. And it took that dramatic of an experience in order to realize that so much of my motivation was external and I had very little. I turned to my mother, who was a yogi for years practicing the Dharma. I said, I don't know what to do. I'm so broken. I can't keep going. And it was at her suggestion that I really start to turn more internally. And as I did so, Spirit Rock was the first place I went. I left Chicago and moved to California, and that's what Californians did. They go on Spirit Rock silent retreats. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. I'd never been quiet for 9 days in a row. What? But I did it. And on that retreat, my heart just broke open. I think a lot of us have some shared experience around this retreat. If you're quiet long enough, the dukkha, the suffering can emerge if you give it space and time. And it was so overwhelming. I broke my silence. I went to the manager and I said, you've got to call somebody. I'm touching into this very painful suffering and it is going to break me. I need help. I'm really scared. All of these things that I had stuffed away and things that I wasn't even aware of were starting to come out, and it was so intense. And as I can, I, And so they got the one of the teachers on the retreat was Gina Sharp and Larry Yang. And Gina came and she sat with me. Never knew me a day in my life. She came and just sat and like held my shoulders as I just like broke. And over the next couple of days, working with Larry Yang and Gina, I just started to, they offered me these teachings of the Dharma and some practices. And immediately I felt like I was going to be okay. I could find a pathway through the suffering. And so that's when I decided, but this is incredible. Why doesn't everybody do this? And so I made a commitment in that space, and that was 12 years ago, that I wanted to increase access to the Dharma, particularly for communities that don't have it readily available, queer communities, communities of color. And so that's how I ended up on a teaching trajectory. I just wanted to share a little bit about my experience and how I show up in the seat. So thank you for your kind attention. Just a quick agenda. We'll be practicing for about 25 minutes, silent meditation practice. I may offer a few prompts just to refocus the mind and invite the attention into a single point of attention. After that, we'll just have a quick bio break in case anybody needs to refresh, and then I'll go into a talk. I've prepared some musings on the Brahma Viharas. I have, in these difficult times, I've been teaching a lot about metta and karuna and upekkha and mudita, and I think that tonight I'm going to try and put them all together. And so I will share some musings and reflections, hopefully some new thoughts, and then we'll have a moment to break out into small groups. You can choose to go into a small group where I've got some prompts that will allow you to bring your voice in the room and share and reflect. But if you choose not to do that, I will hold space in the big room for a practice of rain. Which is a practice that Tara Brach loves and talks a lot about. And so I will offer that practice in the big room if you don't care to be in a small group. And then we'll close out with a few reflections from some of my favorite people and some of my favorite books. And then we'll dedicate the merit. That'll be our time together. All right. So if you'll find a posture that feels comfortable, but also alert. If it feels good to you to kind of shuffle your shoulders, and if it's going to turn your torso or relax your shoulders and neck, just bringing awareness into our body, bringing attention to our breath. You might have a deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And if it feels good to lower your gaze or close your eyes even, just bringing awareness to our bodies, noticing what it feels like to settle, having another breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Yeah, just bringing awareness to what it feels like to be held in this chair or on the cushion. Allowing the thoughts to fade away as we invite our attention to focus on an anchor. You could choose your breath, either through the inhalation and exhalation of your breath. You may choose the sensation of your feet on the floor or your hands in your lap. But I'll invite you just to find an anchor to hold your attention for the next 25 minutes or so. We'll be in stationary practice. taking a moment to notice if the concentration has left. The invitation is to bring your focus back to the anchor of the breath or a single point of attention in the body. for this. My invitation is to expand from a single point of attention to multiple points if that feels appropriate. Expand your awareness to include more than just that single anchor. See if you can expand the awareness to hold several points of attention for the next few minutes. in the last few minutes of our practice together. If it feels good to you, I'll invite you to participate in the metta practice. You might recur these phrases to yourself as I speak them aloud. I invite you to bring to your mind's eye and your attention the image of a benefactor, somebody who is invested in your well-being, somebody who's contributed to your character, a dear friend, a family member, someone that you love, and just pull their image to your mind's eye. You may think of them laughing or just walking. But when you've got them in your mind's eye and attention, I invite you to repeat these phrases silently as I say them aloud. May this person feel joy. May this person experience ease. May this person feel safe. May this person feel healthy in their body and their mind and spirit. May this person feel protected from inner and outer harm. May this person feel strong. May this person be free. Come back. How was your practice? How was that? So pleasant to be together tonight. Yeah, I just want to reiterate, you know, Spirit Rock is one of my homes. It was the place where my story began, right? This breaking open. And so I was in retreat there in January. I've taught there before, and I love the community there. So it's just such an honor to be here tonight. I like to start a lot of these conversations, and there will be a chance for the participation, but I like to start with, like, why do we practice? What is the purpose and intention behind your practice? Why did you show up tonight? Why do you endeavor to build community around these teachings? I think it's a really great question to begin with, because I might answer it differently at different points in my practice. I mentioned coming through the doorway of suffering. Many of us do, right? So I know that part of my intention in my practice is to reduce the suffering for myself and for others. I intend to reduce the suffering for all beings. But in the practice of reducing suffering, how do we achieve that? You know, we're in a pretty racialized capitalist society that invites us to think of our return on investments. Is it worth my time? How will it benefit me? And even the most philanthropic of thoughts even if I'm thinking of ways that I can improve the world, I still have a twinge sometimes of wanting to know that I'm doing it with an impact. Right? This idea that the investment should produce something. Some of the ways I think this shows up in our practice are people, let me know if you've heard this before. Oh, I'm sorry for your suffering, but at least you have your practice. I know when my mother passed away, which was the most difficult experience in my life. Deep sorrow, deep grief. And often people in my family, oh, well, at least you're Zen, so you can, you know, you don't have to suffer the way the rest of us do. First of all, I'm not Zen. Second of all, it's not what that means. In my experience, the practice really invites us to be present with the suffering. Right? In my effort to want to reduce my suffering and the suffering of others, the invitation is to be present, not to ignore it or to circumvent it. Perhaps you're familiar with this spiritual circumvention concept. It's, oh, we avoid the discomfort of our current reality because we believe in an ultimate reality. I'm going to put my attention there so that I'm able to kind of work around the discomfort I don't want to engage with. That's not the practice. You know, I think about the, you know, every piece of our practice, including the Four Noble Truths, points to the fact that suffering is part of this experience. And so in trying to reduce my suffering and the suffering of others, am I Sisyphus? Am I working against this giant thing? You know, what is it about our practice? What does it draw us into? What is the why that we continue to sustain? And so one thing that's been coming clear to me that I'd love to discuss tonight is that it does provide refuge. It does not keep me from feeling pain, but I can sometimes catch my breath a little when I find refuge. You know, you ring the bell three times. I invite the bell for the refuge of the Buddha, right? And this isn't just the historical figure. I invite the bell for the refuge of the Buddha, meaning the Buddha nature in all of us. That within each of us, there is the seeds of compassion, the seeds of forgiveness that we can water. This Eightfold Path, these practices that we can invite ourselves into to create more generosity and more compassion. So ringing the bell and inviting the refuge of the Buddha gives me some solace. I ring the bell the second time for the refuge of the Dharma. What's your favorite teaching? It changes for me all the time, but you know, the teachings of the Dharma, the one I've been working with recently is this, the teaching of the second arrow, right? This concept that there is suffering that leads to more suffering and suffering that leads to the end of suffering. How do I participate, or how am I complacent in reproducing my own suffering? You know, there's so many teachings. And so how can you find refuge in those teachings? And then when we ring the bell the last time, what are the Dharma and the Sangha in our community? Often the prickliest refuge, right? There are certain things that you only can learn in relationship that individual practice will not get you to. When Emiko read my little bio, it's true that I have been deeply involved in the East Bay Meditation Center's leadership sangha, and, you know, alphabet sangha, POC. And in those sanghas, I have had some of my deepest learnings. I mean, very uncomfortable, right? The arising of ego, the arising of challenges in communication and misunderstandings. Those don't happen the same way when we're in individual practice. So how does this refuge of the Sangha, which provides such rich learnings and like support in reducing suffering, also is through suffering? So I'm just pointing to like the infinity, the weaving back of, I want to end my suffering, but I must experience my suffering, which leads to the reduction of suffering. And so we're on this path together. I'd like to also point to these divine abodes or these Brahma Viharas, as they're often referenced. Places of refuge, places where deep learnings and practices exist in kind of these four categories. And I'll name them as, we'll start with metta, which we did a brief practice of during the meditation. And the metta, you know, known as loving kindness and known as a practice that often takes up a fair amount of space. There's so, you know, people build their entire practice often around metta. Sharon Salzberg has, you know, written many books, and many of us practice this as a foundational practice to reduce suffering. Often the practice is that we will offer metta, loving kindness, to ourselves, and then we'll offer it to a benefactor, as I invited today, somebody who was very easy to access compassionate feelings for. And then we'll sometimes offer it to an unknown person, right? This practice of what happens when you offer these blessings to folks who don't even know you're offering it to them, just radiating this metta outward to see what it might impact. And then we'll invite in the difficult person. If you offer these same blessings to people who are you're just in discord with, I often invite people not to use the person that's like the most difficult, not the person that's causing you the most harm. But you might find somebody who is you're in close relationship with and you've had a disagreement. You might be someone who you just are frustrated with momentarily. And there's a real benefit to offering your own metta to that person. It can shift. And doing that practice often will build a muscle around compassion and loving kindness towards each other and ourselves. The last thing I'll say about metta is there is a deep relationship to how compassionate you are able to be for others that is connected to how compassionate you can be to yourself. Often the offering metta to ourselves, may I feel joy, may I feel ease, right? That doesn't always come readily. One teacher, Larry Yang, has invited me to think of it as, if you can't offer to yourself immediately for lots of reasons, you might consider stepping it back a little. You might consider saying, may I eventually feel joy and ease? Or I hope that I can eventually want peace for myself and laughter for myself. You might just walk it back a little bit and see how that approach works. But this loving kindness is a refuge, this practice of just grounding and developing these phrases that just create a sensation, an emotion that can radiate outward. It's quite a beautiful practice for ourselves and for each other. I invite us all into it. I'm sure folks have heard of this. Then I'll move on to Karuna, or compassion. The second divine abode is an invitation to understand how compassion can move us forward in our practice of non-attachment. Right? Compassion for others, compassion for ourselves are deeply related. And as we sit in moments of compassion for ourselves, we might notice what's arising to help us identify the challenges. Like part of the practice of compassion is to notice what it's what is resistant to. Only through these practices of, I'm going to sit down today and I'm going to like be compassionate with myself. I'm going to forgive myself. I'm going to see if I can offer compassion to that difficult person. In these practices, we are bound to run into what the resistance is and what the challenge is. And once you know that, holding it into your consciousness, that resistance, what the source of it is, getting curious about what's underneath this resistance, is a practice that can really shift us from, that leads us to less suffering, less attachment to our ego, less attachment to our identity, when we can see what's underneath some of the challenges to offering compassion to ourselves and others. And the third refuge I'll point to is upekkha, or equanimity, full transparency. My husband is very, this is like his natural mode, his modus operandus is very equanimous. And then when we first started dating, I remember telling him, I'm like, you know, people work their whole lives for this. He's just buoyed. He's just, you know, I tend to have a little more drama. Oh, it's amazing. This is so great. And I get swept up. I also have been known to linger in the drama of regret or grief, that second arrow piece I was mentioning, you know, but this practice of equanimity is like, can you be grounded knowing that that the ebbs and flows will actually even out, but can you not be swept away? Can you use your practice to ground and be more resilient to kind of the suffering that comes on either end of these large emotion spectrums? It's not to say that my husband or this practice is to numb us, but when we're aware and we're present with the ephemeral nature of sufferings, we can, yeah, that buoy feeling can really sustain us in our practice. And then lastly, I will point to mudita, the spontaneous or sympathetic joy. Where's the refuge in this, you know? When offering metta, my phrases used to be more internal, and I would just think to myself, I would try to think of, you know, the benefactor, I would try to think of them laughing, or I would try to think of them like having a cool drink of water on a very hot day, that sensation. You know, I was less in the words of it and more about the feeling of it. And if I can tap into that feeling of a child laughter, or, you know, sometimes with an animal, you'll have like a spontaneous moment of joy that your heart just kind of breaks open. And so that practice of mudita, this is actually an inexhaustible source, that when we tap into it, this mudita arising is such a balm for suffering. And it is such a refuge, because even in the moments of my deep grief around the loss of my mother, in my practice, I noticed that there were some things that were pleasant, even in the midst of tragedy. And when I allowed myself to feel the mudita or the joy, or my husband and I fostered this wonderful, beautiful child, Michael. We're still very close with him, but he doesn't live with us anymore. Very difficult times with Michael. And thus this mudita practice, if he could just get me out of a difficult mind space, and very quickly. And so I know that there's moments that we can tap into of joy. And that is a deep refuge that can allow us to create more spaciousness around healing. And so reducing suffering, taking refuge in mudita, joy for ourselves, joy for others, is a deep practice. Wonderful. So those are my thoughts. I'm hoping to have offered something that might have catalyzed, sparked an interest or a conversation. I'm bright on time, which, by the way, is amazing. Wonderful. Well, thank you for being present. I am excited to share with you a practice that, you know, is not, I'm not sure where it originated, but I know that Tara Brach has had great success with this practice, and it's called RAIN, and it's a tool that folks are inviting to process a difficult emotion or a difficult experience. And so it's an acronym that stands for recognize, allow, investigate, nurture, and then notice. And so I'm going to walk us through this practice, and what I'll seed, I'll plant is start thinking of something that maybe is difficult for you to navigate. Again, I want to self-monitor. Please don't think of something that's like the most traumatic or difficult thing in your life right now. It's something that maybe is irksome. It could be a disagreement with a friend or a circumstance that you know you'll get past. So my point is this, let's not, we don't have capacity to really hold something difficult. So let's find something a little manageable. And as you're thinking about that, I'm going to just share my screen. So the concept and the framework that really is being offered is that we find a point of dissent or of dissonance, and we take moments in our breathing and our consciousness to just acknowledge that there is something that's amiss. Acknowledge that dissonance, acknowledge the frustration or the challenge. And then oftentimes we can really be socialized into like putting it away, like forget about it, don't pay attention to it. But we're going to actually recognize what the thing is, and we're going to be present with it. And then the A in RAIN is for allow. So as we've identified it and we're being present with this challenge, we're going to really allow the thoughts and the emotions around it to kind of wash over us. We're going to acknowledge the feelings of it. We're going to just be present with it without trying to change it. We're just going to be really present with that feeling of it, which may be uncomfortable. And then the I in investigate is for, excuse me, in RAIN is for investigate. So what we'll do is we are going to get curious. You know, as we're sitting with the sensation and the challenge and the difficulty, we're going to try to see if we can explore what's underneath it. Like what's the origin of it? Is it as simple as just this one thing, or is there something that's referencing a larger wound, or is there something that might be, we're going to investigate what we think is the origin of it. And then the first N in RAIN is for nurture. So we're going to take a moment and we're just going to offer ourselves some kindness. So I'll invite you to either put your hands on your chest, or if it feels good, sometimes it feels good for me to put my palms in my eyes. This is another good one. It's just like the hug and the like squeeze a little bit. So we're actually going to try a few things that feel nurturing to us while we're in the midst of experiencing this challenge. And then we're going to slow down and then notice if anything has shifted. So it's a great framework just to kind of walk through to see if we can process part of an emotion or challenge. And again, the RAIN practice can sometimes go R-A-I, A-I, A-I-N, I-A. You know, it doesn't have to only be once in the one direction. Once you get these practices together, I will spend time going back and forth, investigating, oh, okay, nurture. Well, that didn't work so well. I'm going to go back to allow, you know, so it doesn't have to be linear. All right, so if you feel comfortable, please find a posture that feels alert but also a little relaxed. If you can pull to your mind's eye some content that is challenging that you're experiencing. Oh, so sorry. One second, please. Here you go, Emiko. I'm so sorry. I forgot the prompts. There they are. Sorry. Great. So you find a posture that feels comfortable and alert. We're just going to be in this practice for about 10 minutes. So you might start by just having a nice cleansing breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Just settling in and feeling the weight of yourself in the chair, knowing that this will just be a few moments. You can be present here, having another breath in through the nose. And out through the mouth, oh, allowing the body to really settle. And we'll start with recognize. So just for about 30 seconds or so, we're going to take a time to just see if we can recognize any thoughts, feelings, or sensations around the challenge that we're going to work with. So I'll ring the bell in and then ring the bell out. Take 30 more seconds to sit with any emotions or sensations around the feelings or the challenge we're having. Or is it the A for allow? We're allowing the emotions and sensations to wash over us. We're just going to be present with them. It may be unpleasant, but for 30 seconds or so, we'll just sit and just really feel into the emotions tied to this challenge that we're investigating. Noticing what those emotions and sensations feel like in the body. And then we're going to invite our natural curiosity to investigate, you know, what do we know about this challenge? What's the truth of it? And what are we, what unmet need is present with this challenge? So just take about a minute to sit with and explore, investigate. Use your natural curiosity to understand what is the nature of this challenge and what does it need? Reflecting on that curiosity, if you have kind of an idea of the unmet need or the nature of it, our next step is N, which is to nurture ourselves. So I'm going to invite you to put a hand on your chest, if that feels good. Take a nice deep breath in. And then out. Can you offer yourself some nurturing? If it feels good, you might shift your hands and kind of like hold your shoulders like a hug. Maybe just give your shoulders a little squeeze just to know that you're there for yourself. If this feels nurturing, you might hold that for a while. Then explore other gestures of nurturing. You might put your hand on your belly. You might put your hand on your head or hold your neck. So for the next minute, just really explore a couple different ways to nurture your body, nurture yourself. Just another 30 seconds to really offer ourselves some loving kindness and some gesture of nurturing for ourselves, whatever feels good. And then as we move into the left end, which is really for noticing, we're just going to kind of walk ourselves back into the present moment. And it feels good to squish your toes or your fingers and have another breath in and out. Just take 30 seconds to notice if anything has shifted since we started the practice. Maybe a body scan, just to notice anything that may have changed in the last 7 minutes or so. Wonderful. And then if it feels good, just open your eyes or uplift your gaze when you're ready. This practice of recognize, allow, investigate, nurture, and notice, it's meant to create some spaciousness for exploring intense emotions or difficult emotions. There are other versions of this, but I found it very helpful in my practice to have just a light framework to walk through. And like I said, it doesn't have to be linear. I am also aware that if my intention doesn't match my impact, if I've caused harm in any way, my words or deeds, I ask for your forgiveness. I will hang on the line if people want to speak to me afterwards about feedback. And then, I think we'll move into the dedication of merit, if that's okay, Himiko. So nice to be with my queer family. If you could find a posture again that feels comfortable and alert. Just allowing yourselves to find a comfortable posture, but also just bring your attention inward and notice, there are many thoughts shared this evening. Just playing through the conversation and the practices. Acknowledging the sangha of what it's like to be together in rainbow fashion. Just taking a moment to be grateful for this container, for the teachings, for our connection. It feels good to have a nice deep breath here. Aware of the suffering and the dukkha being experienced throughout the world. Noting the challenges, the harm, and the difficulties that folks are experiencing. I take a moment just to gather together any merit that we've accumulated in our practice together tonight. The merit that we've generated through our mindful practice, through our Sangha practice, through our Dharma practice. Any merit that we've generated together this evening may be gathered up, it may be distributed. May it move like a ripple from us into the world. May the merit of our practice together bring ease and reduce the suffering of all beings in all directions, with particular love going out to our queer siblings experiencing harm.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.